You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com, the number one American African podcast in the country. Some say, obviously, probably is the one here, might be number one around the world. And that being the case, let's spread that message around the world for our people, for total liberation. Let's spread that message. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. It is Friday. It's the weekend. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you're going to have to get it done. But if you are in the path of this tropic storm that is brewing up in the Gulf, going to hit New Orleans hard, all the way up into Mississippi and Arkansas and even above. Man, I'm praying. Pray for y'all. Man, it's going to be deep. Yeah. But get it done, brothers and sisters. Do what you're supposed to do. Get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, brothers and sisters, you can always go to timeforanawakening.com and look in the area on that front page for other programming. And when you click on that, the first one you see is African Perspectives. And we now have programming on there for those who do that and want to hear some previous programs. We don't have all of our previous programs, of course, but we have some select numbers of them there. And so you can check that out. But also check out other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, right after my program, I'm 10 to 11, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On Monday and Wednesday, the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. From 1 to 3, the Black People Matrix, Franklin Jones, on Monday and Wednesday. Also on Monday evening from 6 to 8, all times are going to give are Eastern times. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Right after that is Reparations. The discussion on reparations from 9 to 10 right here on Time for an Awakening Media. I hope to talk to my good brother Jamoki Infanteo, who is with in Cobra, and we'll talk about the convention, a few other things, after I get these announcements done. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy, 7 p.m. to 8. If it's Friday, today's Friday, well, 8 p.m. this evening, it's going to be Time for an Awakening, y'all. Time for an Awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard on Fridays from 8 until Saturday, tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then on Sunday, Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then on Sunday evening, once again, it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Other programming right here on Time for an Awakening Media. We Buy Black. Well, actually, this is on my program, and then on Time for Awakening Media. It's on It's on African Perspectives. I'm promoting a number of things, and I'm not getting paid for it. I don't care. I just want the information out there. That's what's important to me. I want this information to be announced and to be utilized and to be acted upon. That's the main thing, acted upon. The largest online marketplace is WeBuyBlack.com. It is, you can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses through WeBuyBlack.com. But if you are in the Atlanta area and you're near the Greenbrier Mall, you can go to the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk there of WeBuyBlack, and you can get your laundry detergent, and everything there is produced. I ain't talking about we bought it from some Asians and then we selling it. No, it is produced by us. So check them out. Check them out online and, of course, at the kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall here in Atlanta. Bumani Tahimba, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. He took a number of our people, I think over almost 60 of our people, to Ghana back in May, to Ghana, West Africa. A 14-day tour of the country. Seen some pictures. You go online. If you're looking for pictures of his previous tours, it is on Facebook.com/Bomani. If you're looking for video of his previous tours, it's YouTube.com/Bomani2007. And he's going to South Africa in November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then he's going to Ghana again before the year's out, December 24th to January 4th, 2020. And you can be on either one or both of those if you go online, find out how much it's going to be. But you can give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Get everything right at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They got furniture. They got clothing. They got artwork. They got bigger rings. They got the red, black, and green shoes. They got Kwanzaa kits. You name it, they have it at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End. Oh, hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, and Sunday on from 1 to 3. And the number to call is 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. Shrine of the Black Madonna. They also have a class every Saturday. It is free and open to the public. Know Thyself, from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., given by Brother Olatunji, an outstanding job. But if you can't make that, you can get the multimedia library that they have. You can purchase that. It is over, brothers and sisters, it is over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. Brothers and sisters, it is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment at your disposal. The bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall is the Medu Bookstore. Medu means writing. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. They have the kiosk for We Buy Black is right by there. So once you go to the kiosk, We Buy Black, go into the Medu Bookstore, browse, buy some books. If you're looking for a book, believe me, if they don't have it, they'll get it for you. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9, Sunday from 12 to 6. And the number to call is 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore located in Ithonia. My good brother Gazimde Ajamu, give him a call at 404-519-8107. It's in the Greenbrier Mall. Excuse me, that's in Ithonia. 404-519-8107. Yeah, I'm going too fast, right? I guess. Us Lifting Us. Last night they had their broadcast, their Thursday night broadcast from 9 p.m. to 10 on Blog Talk Radio, 929-477-2789, to be a part of that and discuss what's going on with ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. We pulled our monies together and we created Cafe ULU, located here in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, open Tuesday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And brothers and sisters, we have coffee If you, because a lot of places don't really have, there's a coffee shop, they don't really have a variety of coffee. We do. We have African coffees. We have Cameroon. Cameroon Boyo, brothers and sisters, is delicious. Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenyan, and of course Ethiopia, where coffee originated. But other coffees from Panama, Nicaragua, other African countries, Uganda. And talk with a brother from selling a coffee from Namibia in Angola. So we have coffee. Cafe Ula. Check us out online at usliftingus.com for the organization to become a member, to become a part of this co-op. And check us out online to go to Cafe Ula, cafeulu.com, and check it out and buy some product. Buy some product. Another product we have at Cafe Ula is Ambrosia, created by Brother Novak Young. It's a vitality drink. It is outstanding. It is delicious, Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti created Akabin Institute, him and his lovely wife, Yah, you know. I'm going to be reading today from the Arrow. They have a little piece in here about Baba Baruti and Yah and the work that they do that maybe I need to once again reiterate so you understand the importance of supporting Akabin Institute here in Atlanta. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. You just make a check out to Akabin Institute, or you can go to PayPal and give monthly or whatever. It's what I do. It's that easy. Do it. Okay? We need help. We need help for institutions and organizations that are working on behalf of the liberation and the self-determination and the sovereignty for African people. It is that or perish. It is that serious. It is that simple. Marlimu Bomani Baruti is the co-founder and director of Akabin Institute and an independent African center full-time and after-school homeschooling and tutorial program for the middle and high school schoolers, high school ages. Over the last half decade, Brother Baruti also taught various African center evening courses for adults at the Institute and online, including in those was a writer's workshop for those interested in writing and self-publishing. Moreover, he is an experienced chess teacher who taught chess at independent black schools for over a decade. Brother Baruti is the author of 18 self-published books, including Excuses, The Political of Interracial Coupling in European Culture, Chess Primer, The Sex Imperative, Homosexuality and the Feminization of African Males, Isafo, The Warriors, Complementarity, Thoughts for African Warrior Couples, Kipuke, Eurasian, Battle Plan, Notes Toward Higher Ideas and African Intellectual Liberation, Inyesesim, which I'm going to be reading from shortly, Yorugu's Eunuchs, Center David, and Message to the Warrior. He is currently working on a book entitled Asylum, which examines the insanity of European culture in an identity which will recapitalize a number of social concepts in African-centered terms. Brother Baruti served as an assistant professor of psychology at Morehouse from 91 to 2001, 10 years. Committed to the studies, he has served as a faculty advisor to numerous student organizations at Morehouse, as well as other institutions in the Atlanta University Center. He received his graduate training at the University of Chicago and also taught at Chicago State University. Recognized for his dedication to the community, he has been a keynote speaker, guest lecturer, and moderator for numerous forum programs and activities in a number of places around the country and the world. His lecture topics have ranged from African manhood, male and female relationships, European sexual insanity, interracial coupling to the Middle Passage. Brother Baruti lives in Atlanta with his wife of 28 years, Yah Baruti, and also co-founder and director of their homeschooling program. The Barutis will conduct a workshop, male, female, at the Save the Black Family in San Antonio. That was last month. But I just want to make you know why we support this man. I met a sister, as I said in the last few broadcasts, I'll continue, a sister from Haiti. She works in the northern part, the northeastern part of Haiti, Sister Gabby. Her organization is Sonjay-Haiti, SONJE-AYITI.org. Check it out. She's done fantastic work for what she's doing with brothers and sisters. Because, you know, in the rural areas, they hardly get, in countries like that, island nations like that, they hardly get anything. I mean, no infrastructure, nothing. So she has been doing a great job. And then if you go online, you'll see what I'm talking about. And she deserves to be supported. And there's a mechanism for doing so. Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund. And that's Brother Scotty Reed. You need to go to BTRN.com. And you'll see on the Black Talk Radio Network website, and you'll see right there, it'll say the project. Click on that. And even you don't have to even click on that. Just scroll down, and you'll see the donate to the project. Hit on that and make that happen. Okay? You see the donation. So make that happen. Inye Sesim. The Inye Sesim. The daily revolutionary thought. And then what is today? Today is July the 12th. July 12th. A person who doesn't realize he or she is lost is not looking for a way home. Mwali Musanjay. This cannot be the only reality we know of others which thrive before it. We know of times when science was finally turned divine instrument and not a God-veering weapon wielded by pale predatory politics. There was times when people did not glorify property over life or conspire to murder each other over material possessions. Though deliberate study, we can still victoriously view these ages when rank did not arrogantly define character or license tyranny, when a person's station in life was determined by his or her heart, talents, and desire, and not his or her ascribed privilege or deceit. Though now somewhat clouded, we can remember when good character was inevitable, not because of its rarity, but because of its perseverance wherever we were. So how do we get back to the way we once knew and once governed humanity without sacrificing the future? How can we move African people and then humanity away from defining the abnormal as normal and the normal as abnormal? Is it even possible for mere humans to perform such a Sankofa task? We think so, but only if we mere humans are fully reconnected with spirit and if we remain consistently aware of the nature of the beast that we must die if we are to live, that must die if we are to live. Affirm, I am not lost because I have found my way back home. Affirm, I am not lost because I have found my way back home. July 13th. Those who seek temporary security rather than basic liberty deserve neither. Queen Mother Moore. Queen Mother Audley Moore. People sense it. They can feel it in the air. Even though most cannot identify it or touch it, they know something is wrong, has been wrong, and terribly wrong. But whatever it is, it has run its course. It has returned home, for it has nowhere else to go. It can no longer hide behind blinding others. It is afraid, and its fear reacts with terror against anyone or anything within its reach. Truth always surfaces. It cannot be hidden, or African war scholars could not know what we know. But to set us free from this terror, it must be acted upon. I repeat, to set us free from this, it must be acted upon. It must correctly be dealt with, finally, forever. We must become the force of correction, or our enslavement becomes more sophisticated and indefinite. Enslavers learn from and correct these mistakes that in the past threatened the reality with revolution from below. Embracing the wisdom of those who have earned the right to be called elders and ancestors, we must walk their path if we are to eliminate this chaos from humanity. In this quest, African war scholars must know we owe our people. Answer only to the universe and can no longer allow Europeans to spread their destructive confusion. Of this, there can be no doubt. Affirm, I am a force of correction. Affirm, I am a force of correction. The Yinye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. It always kind of sets the tone for us here at African Perspectives.
because on this program, we talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, because we say there is no other discussion. And we don't want to debate with any Negroes or anybody about this, that, or the other. We want to talk about how do we achieve it? How do we make it become a reality? Maybe not in our lifetimes, but we see that happening for our future, for our children. You're listening to African Perspectives right here on the Motherland Media Network. Have a guest, and that is Brother Jomoke Afenteo. He is the chairperson for the NCOBRA chapter, the National Coalition for Black for Reparations in America, here in Atlanta. Brother Jomoke, how you doing?
I'm magnificent. How are you doing, Baba?
I'm doing fine, my brother. I'm doing well. So how's the program coming along on Monday nights? And what is the program called again so I can make it right when I announce your program?
Yes. Conversation Reparations.
Conversation Reparations on Monday night. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yeah, right. We've been branding that phrase since about 2014.
Oh, wow.
I introduced a campaign called Conversation Reparations, or Conversation Reparations 365.
Okay.
And we're continuing, also hashtag Conversation Reparations. So we're continuing in that vein.
Okay.
With the radio show title.
So that's 9 p.m. to 10 p.m.
That's correct.
All right, Brother Jomoke. And who is with you? I thought her sister.
Sister Bonita Lacey. She's a new female co-chair of NCOBRA.
We have
dual leadership, male and female co-chairs. So I'm
right.
The male co-chair. And she's the, I want to say interim female co-chair until we make it official.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Okay, I got that down. So when I announce that, I will be announcing that on every program that I do, which is Conversation Reparations from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. right here on Time for an Awakening Media. Appreciate it, man. I'm glad you're with us, man. So how was the conference in Detroit, the NCOBRA conference in Detroit? In light of all the things that are happening, I know there was a lot of buzz at this year's convention.
Yeah, and before I do that, I did just want to just acknowledge you and thank you for your beautiful opening for your show, in terms of calling libation, in terms of, letting people know of all of the wonderful resources and institutions and individuals in our community. You know, from We Buy Black to the Barutis to, the radio shows that you introduced. And that was just really, Madu, Shrine of Black Madonna,
yep.
All of those.
I know you know them.
Key institutions
in our community. Yes, they are.
Have been for a long time.
Yes.
You know, sometimes they don't get lifted up,
Right.
So just appreciate you, giving them a shout out and encouraging. A lot of times people feel like, they don't know where to go, and there's so many resources we have in our community. So
yes, it is.
Appreciate of you, opening your show in that powerful way and, giving a black pages. The black pages roll call.
Exactly. The black pages. Yep. I know we had a good one in Milwaukee at one time. I don't know what's happened.
Yeah.
But when the black pages started coming out across the country with what business about.
Yeah, we had one in Atlanta too
for
a while.
Yeah. So I appreciate it, dear brother. I do. But I know when I see you, I know I'm in the right space. When I see Brother Jomoke, I'm in the right space, and I appreciate that, man.
And likewise.
Because I know that me and you will always, whatever we have to do to work together, we will do that, Brother Tut and everybody else in our community, because there shouldn't be any divisions, especially among us who are supposedly conscious, who are African-centered, who are Pan-Africanists, who are national. It shouldn't be you may deal with it at a different time or a different way, whatever, but we have to be together. We have to close ranks. Pull our resources and to make things happen for our people. And not just here in Atlanta, across this country, throughout the diaspora, and truly on the continent. Because, getting off into the reparations discussion, I was talking to a brother, and he was saying, you know, I was saying that those who try or think they understand reparations, they're not just not they don't necessarily know Pan-Africanism. But those who understand Pan-Africanism, they know reparations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know why. Because if you understand Pan-Africanism, you understand the suffering of our people, the suffering of our ancestors. You understand this culturally and historically, and you know why reparations are necessary and vital. But if you just understand reparations but don't understand the struggle of our people, then you have no understanding of that. Well, some don't, in that reparations movement like ADOS, don't agree with Pan-Africanism. How's crazy they don't agree with Pan-Africanism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what they want is some money. Those who are in that we ain't Africa, we ain't Africans, we indigenous. The European came here and took us from here and took us to Europe, then took us to Africa and brought us over here. But we ain't Africa. I mean, when I read that the other day, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding, y'all. Stop this. You know, but we ain't African. But we want some money because, hey, we have this our rightful place, you know. We're indigenous to this land and we need to get paid. You know, and that's called confusion.
It is interesting, some of the craziness that we're hearing right now in the reparations movement. You know, I don't even know if I should call out names, and I'm be nice. I won't call out names, but there's a high profile person in our community who makes videos, good videos. But he, you know, he did this show on talking about the hearing, the reparations hearing. And of course, you know, he was being very critical of the hearing and the people who were on the hearing, and Danny Glover and different ones. Of course, you know, the Republicans put up two people, and of course, you know, everybody was critical of them. Like they were just, you know, they were just, you know, modern day, we call them coons or whatever.
Exactly.
But you know, what was so interesting was, you know, the level of, to me, what was interesting, it was that he was so critical about what, you know, what people, you know, the panel and what people were saying, mm-hmm. and making mockery of it. Yet and still, he says, you know, if I was on the panel, I would ask them, you know, where's the room, you know, where's the room so I can go get my check? Like, what's the elevator to take me to the room? I'd get my check, and I would have left out there with a check for y'all. Like, to me, that was the most ridiculous thing that was said, right? I mean, that's even more ridiculous than all other stuff that was said. Mm-hmm. He's going to call them out for saying extreme, you know, for you know, making a mockery out of them. Mm-hmm. But then you just made the biggest mockery, in my opinion, by saying something like that. Like, mm-hmm. do you really believe you could just go to Washington, D.C., and just say, oh, give me my reparation check, show me the room, and go down there, and they're going to cut you a check, and you're going to walk out with a check. Like, really? Like, you know, I mean, this is the irony of it all. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, I did another show when we were doing the conversation reparation show. Somebody called in, and Brother Elliot said, you know, why do we need to have conversation? Just cut the check. You know, and I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, that's so immature. It's like, that's just like saying, I need a car. And I tell you, go to a car lot, get the keys, get in the car, and drive off. Like, how realistic is that? You know,
that,
like,
ain't happening.
You ain't going nowhere without a driver's license.
Right.
You ain't going nowhere if you don't know how to drive a car. You ain't going, you can't take the car off the lot if you don't got insurance. And you definitely ain't taking the car off the lot if you ain't made some kind of payment arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
And even all of those are processes. You just don't get a driver's license. You got to go through a process. You just don't get a loan for a car. You got to go through a process.
Right.
You know, even if you have cash money, there's still a whole bunch of paperwork that you got to fill out just to buy a car. And you got to have a driver's license and all that. That's life. This is real life. You know, we got to stop saying these, you know, extreme statements. You know, in reparation, H.R. 40 is going through the process that a bill goes through. This is the process of how this government works now. And I say to them, if you know a way to go and get the check, go get it. You know, hey, help all African people.
Yeah.
But stop saying that stuff. It's not realistic.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think there's some people who say these kind of ridiculous things, knowing all well, and it's kind of like sabotage that wouldn't happen. But, you know, a lot of times in certain situations, you got to think, what would Caucasians do? What would Europeans do? How would they react to this? How would Caucasians act to a brother going into a church, killing nine people? What kind of forgiveness would Caucasians have in their heart to forgive him almost before he was even? And what if he was arrested having gone to This Is It for a meal? This Is It is a barbecue place, y'all. In here before and get a meal before they arrest him, you know, and put him in the back of the car, you know. How would they feel?
Right.
See, and a lot of times we know how they would feel. We know how they would react. We know how violent prone and evil and mean spirited these son of guns are. We know it. But yet the fear that they have put into us, you know, doesn't allow us to say truly what it is. It's only liberated minds like yours and mine and many others. And understand this, y'all. Understand this. That's why I've always said you can't be in corporate America and be conscious too. They're not diametrically opposed to one another. Because being conscious means you have a love for our people. Being in corporate America, you don't give a damn about no damn body. All you care about is the bottom line. Now, if you can trick that, then and send the money to us, you know, and be anonymous and say, hey, I'm tricking these folks, but I'm working on behalf of our people. Well, let's see. That's one thing. I doubt it. But the reality is that, you know, we don't have that here in America. It's very hard. That's why, to me, don't worry about the masses. Damn the masses. We want the dedicated, rightful-minded few who are willing to help educate our people, help give money to certain organizations that if you have money, you know, to help support those organizations, help rally people around them and so forth. That's what is necessary. That's what is needed.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how was the convention in Detroit?
Sure. Well, we had a very high level convention. You know, I think that we raised the bar. It was our 30th convention, and so, you know, and having it in Detroit was just perfect for so many reasons. You know, at first I was wanting to have it. At first, I was leaning toward us having it in Virginia because Virginia is where
the
400th anniversary.
Right.
You know, markation is happening, and again, you know, we could always, you know, always qualify that, you know, that's the British version, and that's one version, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, we, you know, that is a historical marker in terms of enslaved Africans being brought to what's now known as Port Comfort or
right.
Fort Monroe, Hampton, Virginia. And it's also where my mother's family is from, so I know a little bit about that area.
Okay.
And was working on talking to some of the elders of Encobra, because we used to have a chapter in that area. So I was talking to some of them about seeing how we could revitalize the chapter in that area to host the convention there. But it ended up, you know, feeling like the tide kind of shifted towards, or I say the ancestors shifted the tide towards having it in Detroit.
Okay.
And I think that was just perfect because, you know, in addition to the 400th anniversary, which was our theme, 400 years of terror, a debt still owed, Detroit, in 2019, there were some critical markers. One is John Conyers turned 90 years old in May, right before our convention, and we had never honored him. I asked Reverend Dr. Joanne, you know, have we ever honored, you know, Congressman Conyers? And she said no. She said we've invited him to our conventions and
right.
Sometimes he'll send a representative. Mm-hmm. However, we've never taken the time out to honor him. So we need to do that in Detroit, you know, in 2019. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, Reparations Ray Jenkins.
Yeah, Reparations
may
Ray.
Not know about.
Yeah, Reparations
but, you know,
Ray.
He was a stalwart in
yes,
terms of raising the issue of reparations in Detroit for years and years and years and whispering in the Conyers' ears.
Yes, sir.
The bill HR to do a bill, which now is known as HR 40, a reparations bill. And so he transitioned in 2009. So it's the 10th anniversary of his transition. And I don't think we've ever really recognized or honored him as well.
Sure.
And then you had the 50th anniversary of the Black Manifesto, which was introduced by James Forman at Wayne State University, April 26, 1969, in Detroit, Michigan.
I
had a program earlier this year in Atlanta, lifting up that history of the Black Manifesto, which was a call to challenge white churches to put $500 million into a reparations fund, and that would be the start of the reparations, you know, movement. You know, not he didn't feel like that was the end all be all that was sufficient for reparations, right. But that could get things moving by having churches understanding their moral responsibility that there's, if you do a wrong, you apologize, you make amends, and then there's reconciliation. And so, you know, so that was another movement that was birthed out of Detroit, and again, the 50th marker of that. And then the 51st year of the Republic of New Africa just having been formed the year before. And what a lot of people don't know about the Republic of New Africa was that the first campaign that they launched in Detroit as a grassroots campaign after the big meeting that brought the Republic of New Africa together was a reparations petition campaign, was to organize people and talk to them about the plebiscite and about reparations, and again in Detroit. So all of this, you know, to me, I said, oh, okay, I see. And it's the 30th anniversary of the bill itself, H.R. 40, because it was first introduced in 1989. So all of those dates coming together, we said, yeah, so Detroit made sense. And we recognized those things in Detroit. We gave, you know, we were concerned about Conyers coming to our convention, but he was able to make it. You know, like I said, because he's 90 years old. And there were some concerns about his health challenges, but he did come out. His son came with him as well, brought him there. And in addition to that, we also recognized Reparations Ray Jenkins. His son, came, and we gave him an award, and he spoke very strongly about his son. We also, I mean, about his father, excuse me. And then we also had the nephew, attorney Maynard Henry, who was the nephew of Imari Obadeli and Gaidi Obadeli. They he came and spoke about Imari Obadeli and his contributions. And he's also an activist attorney himself, and actually did some work for Imari Obadeli, some legal work for Imari Obadeli and other brothers and sisters in the Republic of New Africa. And he's based in D.C., Maryland area. And then, of course, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, Brother Obadeli is significant in the fact that he was like a founder of both organizations.
Correct.
You know,
Republican New Africa. I mean, we like to consider that a government.
Yeah.
But yes, he was a founder of both of those, visionary behind both of those, definitely. And so, yes, it was important to recognize him as well at the 30th. And and then, of course, the highlight, I don't know if I should, well, just, I guess I'll just go with the flow. So the highlight, of course, still was that we had, and also we had Greg Mathis, who's done, had a lot of history in Detroit.
Judge Mathis?
Judge Greg Mathis.
Judge Mathis.
Was our keynote speaker.
Okay.
Yeah, Judge Greg Mathis was our keynote speaker at our banquet. And again, I think all of this, I need to just, you know, pause and just recognize Reverend Joya Watson, because she is such a
she's a giant
in Detroit.
Oh yeah, she's a giant.
And an anchor within COBRA, anchor with Republic of Africa. She's on city council. She's a college professor. She has a radio show at one point. You know, she had a major, I think, the morning slot of a black radio station in Detroit at one point. She had a television show at one point. And you know, just, you know, so every time we were planning stuff, she was like, oh, I can get that person. Oh, I can get that. Oh, I can, you know, get, you know, she opened up the door so as to have one of our, you know, have the convention, one of the days of the convention at the Charles Wright Museum.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Which is, you know, premier museum in Detroit.
Was in the nation,
before they opened the Smithsonian.
That's right.
Yeah, she was able to get us the venue for when Farrakhan spoke at he spoke at a place called Burt's Marketplace, which is like this huge entertainment complex with several restaurants and a big event hall that holds over 1,000 people. And she was able to work that out. Just so many things. She was, you know, she was close friends with, I mean, she has a rapport with Greg Mathis. That's why we were able to get him. She had a rapport with, you know, Reparations Ray Jenkins' son. That's why she was able to get him. She has a rapport with John Conyers. She used to work in John Conyers' office. That's why we were able to get him.
She's a connect.
And I could go on and on. Like I said, so we do hats off, prayers go up, give thanks, Asante sign up, and all of that for Reverend Joanne and what she contributed to our convention this year.
Yeah. She's a giant in Detroit. Yes, she is.
She is. Yeah. And, did
Adolph show up?
They did not.
Good.
They did not. Yeah, there were some rumors about them
coming,
but they did not. And
I'm glad they didn't show up.
And then, you know, Minister Farrakhan, which I didn't mention, I think I was getting ready to mention.
Right, he was a speaker too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was also, we give thanks for Dr. Conrad Wall, who was our intermediary to Farrakhan, and he arranged a meeting for our leadership to meet with Farrakhan, and Farrakhan, you know, agreed to endorse, officially endorse the convention, and also to put some resources behind the convention in terms of particularly his media resources, the Nation of Islam live stream convention.
Okay,
they,
outstanding.
Put an article in every issue of the Final Call advertising the convention and promoted it through their Twitter network as well. And so, yeah, and then again, as we got closer to the convention, we wasn't sure if he was actually going to come or not, but he did tell us that yes, about a month out, that he definitely wanted to be there. And so we had a community report back, town hall meeting, and he was the keynote speaker.
Outstanding.
At that. And so, yeah, as well as he was, as well as we gave him an award at the banquet as well, where Judge Greg Mathis was the keynote speaker, but we still honored Farrakhan. We gave him the Imari Obadeli, President Imari Obadeli, Queen Mother Moore Lifetime Reparations Achievement Award. And so we recognize, you know, his work and the work of the Nation of Islam as well in supporting the reparations movement. So, yeah, it was quite a powerful event. You know, I was really... you know, I was, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, sharing today about the event. I was like, you know, I could talk about the particulars and the workshop and all of that, and I don't know how interested people are in that level of detail or not, as opposed to just thinking about certain things, like just to me, just the you know, the electricity that was in the room, just the level of, you know, different types
energy,
of organizations
of
that was in the room. We had, you know, Brother Greg Kimati Carr out of Howard University and Mario Beatty with, you know, also at Howard University.
Yeah, they're both with ASCAC.
And, you know, so many different ones. You know, we had some local leaders.
And I know Conrad is with National Black United Front, MBUF, and they're meeting this weekend. They're meeting
in
this
D.C.
weekend.
He was a speaker as well as our convention.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get him on next week, Wednesday. I talked to him earlier. Definitely try to get him on because there's some number of issues that we're talking about as well. But and hopefully, if you could join us next week Wednesday to discuss what's happening with the National Black United Front in Buff. And what's happening in the reparations movement as it relates to our struggle. Because I know Brother Conrad, and if you know him, because I've known him for many years, he is something else, but he is true. He is a diehard. He is true.
I was glad to kind of begin to develop a rapport with him in the planning of this convention, because there were several times he called me, and if you, like you said, if you know his spirit, he has a way of... what should I say? trying to put it the right word.
I know.
Gently chastising you.
Exactly.
Gently correcting you to bring you in
yeah.
line. How about
yeah.
that?
Yeah, that's a good one, Jamal. Okay, because I mean, he doesn't mean.
And we put quotations around the gently.
Exactly. Yeah, brother.
Gently, not so gently. But I have so much respect for him that I, you know, when I learned that was his style, I appreciated it.
Yeah,
I took it in. You know, we made the corrections. You know, and then he actually called me right after the convention was over. I was surprised to get a call from him. He called me right after the convention was over. Just wanted to let me know he had got back safe in Chicago, and it's like, you know, if anytime you need to communicate with me, just let me know. And that was really cool. You know. Develop that rapport with him.
So now I know you're working on the local level. Where are you on the national level of NCOBRA?
Sure, on the national level, I'm the Southeast Regional Representative.
Okay.
So that's about
10 states or so,
from
okay.
Virginia all the way through
how many,
Mississippi.
How many chapters that are active in this Southeast region?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have 3 active chapters, but we got a lot more now, you know, that are people I'm having conversations with that want to bring a chapter online. So there's obviously where we already talked, there's active chapter here in Atlanta. There's also active Miami chapter, and we also have a chapter in Selma.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Having some conversation with some other folks in some other cities that in North Carolina and in Central and
good.
North Florida, and about bringing on some other chapters as well.
Well, especially now that there's conversation about reparations
sure.
on a national level with
sure.
a number of political mm-hmm. Individuals who aspire to be the president of this bullshit, that they yeah. want to put reparations out front. Do they really? I don't know. But because, it ain't more, it's more than a notion when you consider the depth of what we have experienced. That's why I'm saying,
sure.
if you know the history, you know why reparations are needed and necessary. But if your ass just want to get a check, and I've said this many times on this program. I tell you what, I'm gonna take a break, Brother Jamoke, and you stick right with us, and we'll be back to talk more about what's happening in the reparations movement, what's happening within COBRA, a little
sure.
highlight of other stuff that we're doing. So my conversation today, dear brothers and sisters, with Brother Jamoke and Fateo. He is the Southeast Region Chair, but also the co-chair, because they have to have a sister. That's how they do it in COBRA,
That's right.
There's some balance, here in the Atlanta area. This is, brothers and sisters, African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. You're listening, and I hope you're enjoying this conversation. We're going to take a break, and after that, we'll be right back. Okay, family.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I just got paid and I'm living for the weekend. That's right, the OJs and Johnny Kemp. This is African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Right after African Perspectives is the Black People Matrix on Monday and Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Also on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 in the evening. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Less by Black 365 from 8 to 9. Right after that is Conversations Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 p.m. to 10, and we'll get back to our conversation with my good brother, Brother Jamoke. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joey and Troy at 7 p.m. On Friday, if it's Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday evening, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is, once again, Revive. And then time for an awakening on Sunday evening, at 7 p.m., from 7 until time for an awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. I also mentioned my good brother, Brother Yusuf Muhammad, who has a program on Blog Talk on Fridays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern, and that is Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. It is. The number to call to listen and to participate is 563-999-3089. Once again, 563-999-3089. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness with Brother Yusuf Muhammad. And I know the brothers and sisters need information about what's about to hit them in the Gulf, because there ain't going to be nothing nice. In fact, to me, if they haven't evacuated already, it's going to be tough on them. To me, I would have just gone ahead and get out. That's for sure. Once again, brothers and sisters, we have a conversation with Brother Jamoke Afenteo. He is the the co-chair here of the NCOBRA, the National Coalition for Black Reparations here in America, along with Sister Lacey. And he's also the Southeastern coordinator or Southeastern director of the National Coalition for Black Reparations in America. But he's also with name some of the other organizations with Brother Jamoke.
Yes, organizations that what?
Name some other. Name the many other organizations you're with.
Well, yes, I'm also the first vice president and Atlanta representative in the PCC of the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. I currently serve on the Reparations Task Force for the Movement for Black Lives. And I also am working with a group called the Fellowship of Reconciliation, Truth Telling and Reparations Campaign. And we need to revitalize here in Atlanta the Metro Atlanta Kwanzaa Association, which I used to be active with. Kwanzaa Association.
Oh. Crimes?
Kwanzaa.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. Say it again, please.
Metro Atlanta Kwanzaa.
Oh, Kwanzaa, yes. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, the Metro Atlanta Kwanzaa Association.
Yes, sir.
Used to be active organization in Atlanta. It is now gone out of existence. Yeah. And we need to revitalize that. I used to be active with that formation, but still active in the Kwanzaa planning.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And Kwanzaa celebrations in the Atlanta area.
Definitely.
But yeah, that's the main work. I've begun to try to keep it all within the reparations framework is the main work that I primarily do.
Well, I know that some of those things that you're involved in are vitally important. I know Kwanzaa is. I look at Kwanzaa as something that is very important for African people because of what it speaks to. It speaks to because the underlining message of Kwanzaa is unity, not unity of conformity, but unity of function. African people being united. And, of course, that's the main thing that the Europeans or Caucasians are very afraid of is African unification on the continent specifically and throughout the diaspora with our people. They know once that happens, it's over for their ass, you know. But Kwanzaa, and to me now, I think that African Liberation Day is one of the most important days that we need to observe, to commemorate, to celebrate, to, you know, to bring attention to more than Juneteenth, more than any. I mean, I ain't speaking ill of Juneteenth because I understand Juneteenth, but I'm saying African Liberation Day is a international observance and understanding recognition of the Africans being liberated, being self-determining, being sovereign. To me, that's more important than any damn thing that we can talk about, especially more than some of the things that we do celebrate. I'm just being real, you know, and I'm not trying to dismiss those things, but the most important, the one that brings us the greater understanding and importance of is African liberation, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. You know, I agree with you. You know, I was at a family reunion recently, and this guy was talking about how he had saw a T-shirt that said, you know, they had a line through 4th of July and said, you know, Juneteenth, our Independence Day.
Right.
And I was like, well, actually, that's not quite accurate. I said Juneteenth represents our Emancipation Day.
Right.
There's a difference from Independence
Day. That's right.
Independence Day is when you have you get your own nation.
That's right.
And exactly. We haven't had an Independence Day yet. Well, other than what we consider March 31st, our Independence Day in the Republic of New Africa, you know. But I said there's a distinction between emancipation and independence.
Yep.
You know, and then even still, Juneteenth is in my mind really the really end of slavery. It was December 6, 1865, when the 13th Amendment was ratified, and then that still qualified because they put the exception clause in it.
Exactly,
so,
we've been feeling the wrath of that acceptance clause since that time with convict leasing and mass incarceration. I say
exactly.
So I mean, you know, when you look at things that are happening with us and some of the things that some of our people come together around, we need some direction. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a myriad of organizations. All of them sometimes are independent, but unfortunately, most times are seeking funding. And truly funding, when you're seeking funding, you ain't seeking funding from our people, unfortunately. You're seeking funding from Europeans, you know, and governments, you know, and so forth, which, of course, hinders their effectiveness to be truly an organization that will truly help our people, not just to be African-centered or Pan-Africanist or no, just to help our people in the context of this madness that we're in. Still ineffective because it is not designed to help African people. You know, this is theirs, not ours. And, you know, and that's the problem that we still don't want to come to grips with. We still are stunned when we hear Caucasians still doing things that you think that they shouldn't be doing, you know, or should be have some kind of help or some compassion or some moral imperative, whatever. We keep looking at that. We keep asking about that. Because you know why, Brother Jamoke? We do not, just like Neely Fuller said, we do not understand white supremacy, how it operates, how it functions. And if you don't understand that, everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. And I maintain that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion. And that's how confused we are. It's crazy, man. It's insanity. It's crazy. You know, we keep hoping and praying. We keep hoping that these crackers excuse me. I ain't supposed to say that on the air. I ain't supposed to, no derogatory and profanities. I try my best, Jamoke. I know this is internet. You can do it, but I really do. Because that's why I always say, brother, I don't give you my opinion. I don't give my opinion. What I try to give is based on the scholarly research of our scholars, our historians, men and women who without foundation money, grant money, anything like that, reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of our people. That's what I give you because my opinion is profane. It is deeply profane. You know me, I cuss, you know, and I'm going to in a minute, but I'm trying to, you know, give the information that our ancestors and our scholars, our historians, our elders, you know, have given for us to be liberated because that's what we must be. I ain't talking about integration, assimilation, go along to get along. You know,
right.
I heard a piece somebody said about an informant when Dr. King was living, and Dr. King began to talk about basically reparations when he talked about what the federal government gave Caucasians to set themselves up.
Right.
You know, and he asked for some trillions of dollars. If you remember that piece, it's been on the YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get. But this Negress, this Negro lady, she says, I'm an American first. I'm not a Negro first. I'm an American first. And anybody who challenges America. So she called him a traitor, called him everything but a child of God. you know. Yeah. And she said this, of course, not 2 months prior to his assassination, you know, about how she felt about Dr. King. And, of course, that was really the general feeling. That was the general feeling about Dr. King in this country by most Caucasians and some Negroes, you know. And even though afterwards when he was assassinated, when he was murdered, then now you can rewrite the narrative. Now you have all this and you got people who, yeah, I walked with King, you know. I'm a part of the civil rights struggle. You know, you're a damn lie, you know. And you helped vilify him. You helped, you know, you helped create the atmosphere that would get Dr. King murdered, you know. And then, of course, there were informants. There were others, you know. See, that's what I'm saying. We keep thinking that we can reform this evil, ugly system that has been created by Europeans for their benefit, you know.
Yeah.
We keep thinking that somehow we can, the Caucasian will have an epiphany and say, you know, I'm really sorry for what we have done. And we want to make amends. We want to give you, you know, hey, I don't know if you remember this, Brother Jamoke. And I mentioned this many times on my program, that there was this Caucasian editorialist named Charles Cuthammer. Charles Cuthammer, I think either when he was with the New York Times or Washington Post, I don't give a damn, one other. He died a couple years ago. But he said something 30-something years ago. I'll never forget. I was reading the article in the Milwaukee Daily Paper, sitting at the firehouse table. And the article read, we should give them reparations. His contention was, we've gave them welfare. We gave them affirmative action. We gave them set aside. We gave this, that, and that New Deal. Give them reparations. Because the mindset that they have, the reparations, let's say we give them 40,000 a family, 20,000 an individual, that would be like a big stimulus package for the country. Because the mindset that they have, we can have Cadillac sales, you know, jewelry and clothes, that because they won't come together, they won't pull those resources, they won't create any institutions, they won't better their communities, they just better themselves. So give them reparations. We'll get it all back within a year. That's the gist of his article. And reality is, it is just that way today than it was when he said it about 30-something years ago. And that's a sad reality.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's when I joined in COBRA, one of the things that I was taught was that we were taught that it was like basically what we call three roads to reparations. Three roads that people could choose. You know, one would be repatriation with reparations, meaning that you would be able to return to Africa and return with Africa with resources such that we could build schools and hospitals and roads and whatever is needed to help develop ourselves in that, set up businesses and industries over there. And you know, that's and I'm going to just spend a minute on that for a second, because I think one of the things that, you know, we understand that we're in that everything is around economics is a key thing in our society today, and industry and how goods and services are distributed. So one of the things that we know, though, is that Africa is strong on producing raw materials, but the manufacturing of that goes to other countries. And you know, once Africa were to begin to say do more manufacturing, the whole game changes, because we have the raw materials in Africa and we'll be doing the manufacturing there, and we'll be controlling the whole process. And then, like I said, that could be a real game changer. But let me finish with the three roads. So the second road is us having a sovereign nation state. And I've mentioned several times, you know, already on this interview around the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. And because, see, actually, the reparations movement or early days, or I should say the reparations, the thrust of NCOBRA was, you know, coming from primarily Black nationalists. However, you know, the idea was to see how we could broaden the train of people who want to be on board with reparations movement. So then we added the third road, which would be continued assimilation. However, you know, the founders of INCOPRA primarily felt that if people were serious about reparations, they would be, you know, more attuned to option one and option two, which is repatriation or sovereign nation, because that's the only way, that's really the only, would only be the real true reparations, because reparations talks about full repair, restoring you to the place that you would have been before the crime happened. Well, surely if we're talking about restoring ourselves to the place before the crime happened, we're talking about us in our own governments, us governing ourselves in different forms of structures that we had in place in Africa, and not coming under the governance of someone else. People may still want that as an option or feel that, you know, because of the damage that's been done to us, like we can't govern ourselves, or we couldn't run our own country, or we couldn't be successful in Africa. And so we understood that. But, you know, I have a friend of mine, he used to always challenge me to speak more strongly about that when I did reparations interviews, you know, like his thing was like, you know, reparations means, you know, separation, you know. And even Farrakhan, when he, in his closing remarks at our INCOPRA convention, spoke very strongly about it. At the end of his remarks, he spoke, matter of fact, he spoke about the Republic of New Africa specifically. He talked about how if black people were to move into the South and begin to take over the state legislatures, and, you know, that would, you know, evolve to a separate nation. He said, because, you know, we've tried to work along with them for 400 years, and we see how that has worked out. So exactly. If you have any sense about yourself, you can see that, like you said, that great epiphany, if they're going to one day wake up and have a different type of character, is not so likely when we've had over 400 years, really longer than that, experience to see, you know, their character and their nature, you know.
Well, I know that as a Pan-African, as a nationalist, and I've been in this particular mode for quite a few years, that because I attended some Republic of New Africa meetings back when they started back in the 60s, been to Republic of New Africa conference. I mean, you know, I'm just a brother who loves African people. And so whenever they're meeting and talking about doing something important with and the importance of dealing with African people, I try to be there to either listen or, you know, give whatever information. But I know I've evolved since that time, since the idea of separation, because we're in the midst of an open and sworn enemy. And looking at the history, every time we have done something collectively to better ourselves, especially years ago because of segregation, when we had to come together to better ourselves, you know, the Caucasian who is mean-spirited, evil, selfish, greedy, vamped on us, vamped on our community, sometimes under the disguise of somebody accosted a Caucasian woman. You know, and then that will give them justification for coming into our communities and destroying them, stealing whatever valuables that were there, burning the place down, killing us or imprisoning us or making us scatter, whatever. You know, it has been that way. I can go on with the places of Rosewood and Tulsa and Allentown and Elaine, Arkansas. There's so many other. Then all. In fact, this is. This year is, in this time of year, is the 100th anniversary of the Red Hot Summer.
Red Summer.
The Red That's Summer right. of That's 1919, right. you know?
Right.
And so, it's, you know, here you had brothers coming back from World War One, being attacked for helping these Caucasians to save Europe and America for democracy, you know?
Right.
So to me, I have no faith, no trust in Caucasians doing what would be honorably right and just. I just it's not in them. It's not in their DNA, you know. And so I have no faith at all. And so they would find ways to do whatever it is to sabotage us on this land, because even Caucasians can't be sovereign on this land. As you know, there have been some Caucasian groups that are especially trying to do something in the Northwest, where Oregon itself became a state saying, we don't want no Africans up in here. They made it a law within their state. But then you have Washington, Idaho, Montana, and so forth. But anyway, they tried to take a some park or something like that a few years ago, if you remember, in the state of Washington. Now, of course, the federal government didn't vamp on them hard like they would if it was one of us. But they waited them out. And then anybody who does, you know, brandish a gun, they'll be shot and killed, you know, of which one of the leaders was. He pulled a gun. And so, you know, they shot and killed him. But the bottom line is you can't, the United States has eminent domain, regardless. Even the discussion with the indigenous people, when they told the United States, hey, this pipeline, we don't want, see, what happened was this, Brother Jamoke, as you know, the pipeline was first going to run through Bismarck or someone in the parts of Dakota, South Dakota, whatever. And that city said, no, we will not have it. And so they just said, okay, fine. We'll just go ahead and run it through the indigenous people's land, through their water, through their ancestral. We'll just go ahead and we ain't going to say nothing to them. We're just going to run it through their land. Then it became an issue, and then finally Barack Obama said to me, it only became an issue because you did not see that information on national TV. You didn't see it on ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, whatever, CNN. You saw it online. You saw it online. And then finally the issue really broke out, and he had to say something. And then when Trump was elected, and those who were in charge of the pipeline, once Trump was elected off, they knew it was over. They were going to run that line. They didn't give a damn who said what. And they did. And they did have a line break in the Missouri water area that is part of that indigenous people's territory. They did mess up, you see. But once they got the go ahead, all those protesters, they fired water cannon on them, fired water on them in November in the Dakotas, November, December, January, you know. They fired rubber bullets. They did all kinds of crazy stuff, man, because they don't give a damn. They don't care about anybody's sovereignty, anybody's rights. They do what they want to do. You know, I always say it's this way, Brother Jamoke. Caucasians have cognitive dissonance. Caucasians developed an idea that they were superior over all humanity. And so any evidence, and there's a lot of evidence to prove that they ain't, comes at them, they dismiss it, they ignore it, they kick it to the curb. So that's the problem they have. They have suffered from cognitive dissonance. They also suffer from what this Caucasian researcher and workshop, Dr. DeAngelo, said, they have white fragility. When she was confronting them with the things that they have done, they didn't want to hear the fact that they pillaged, robbed, raped, murdered, took, supplanted. They don't want to hear that. They want to believe that they're good Christian people and what they did was for the benefit of the world. So they suffer from Caucasian fragility. They are fragile. But see, Brother Jamoke, they didn't want to hear it from the Caucasian. And you know they sure the hell don't want to hear it from us. And then the last thing I feel that they suffer from is hegemony. And the idea of the hegemony is this, of course, you know, is what's mine's is mine's and what's yours is mine's, you know. And that's the mentality of Europeans when they woke up out of that damn medieval dark age, you know, and got together. And said, we may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. They band together. They kicked the Moors and the Sephardic Jews out of Spain. 1492 is a deep year. That's a very deep year, you know, 1492. You know, not just with the Columbus bull, but all the other things that were happening. And then that was the advent of the so-called European Renaissance. And their exploration, they began to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, you name it. And they didn't come to bargain. They didn't come to buy. They didn't come to make a deal. No, they came and took. And they had a theology tied to them in their image. And if you didn't bow down to that and the way they wanted to do it, that's going to kill you. Because they had developed superior weaponry based on what Marco Polo brought back from China. He brought back fireworks, which Chinese used for celebrations. The European began to develop and fashion superior weaponry. And this other thing about the European, I always say, Brother Jamal, okay? They've always found a better way to kill your ass. When you look at their history, you know what I'm saying? When you look at European history, it's better swords, better catapults, boiling oil, you know, all kind crossbows. And look at the torture mechanisms they developed during the Inquisition, you know. And hell, no, look at the stuff they developed in our enslavement, putting on us those big necklaces with the prongs out of it, so if you ran, you couldn't run far because you'd be getting caught up in trees and bush and so forth. And all the other chains and things that they've done. These are some evil people. You could, Brother Jamoke, help me out. Take it from there, man.
Well, I mean, I hear the picture you're painting, and I guess I still always believe in what I say is possible. And, you know, I look at it from, you know, we've been looking at history from, you know, several hundreds of years, or even if you want to go thousands of years. But we do know from our broader historical perspective that, you know, people of color, you know, we have ruled this planet for millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years, and hundreds of thousands of years. And so, you know, what I say, and most people, you know, usually agree with, is that, you know, this period that we're in of their domination is just a temporary period. It's sort of like a and other people say this too, you know, sort of like a you know, bump on the road based on if you look at the whole continuum of human history. So, you know, we have to do what we can in our lifetime to try to move the arc back to righteousness, back to us being, you know, the not just so much us, but the value system, really, what is more important, which is the value system of Ma'at, you know, as opposed to value system. I think I'm trying to remember the words that Leonard Jeffers used to always say, which is cooperation. It's three C's. He used to say cooperation. I can't remember now, but that the value system that of like I said, of Ma'at, of living in integrity and righteousness with each other and with the environment. Because that's another whole conversation we could have as well.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know,
climate change.
That their value system has also not only been detrimental to people of color all over the world, but it's also been detrimental to the environment.
That's right.
And so we're at a state now where we're seeing ramifications of that every day. Like even as we talk right now, the storm is heading towards the Gulf right now of the United States, and it continues in so many ways all around the planet. So, yeah, so
and see,
we have to do what we need to do to turn things back right.
But see, it's not that they're having these storms. They've always had storms. That's the patterns of weather on this planet. As this planet moves and so forth, and these pressure systems and, you know, all that stuff. It's not that. It is the extremes. It's what's happening.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right,
yeah.
The violence of it, because they're going to have a storm.
Yeah, we know we have hurricane season starts in July and goes through, like, September, I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's, like you said, that's, that happens every year.
Right.
But, yeah, we're talking about the extreme nature of these storms and weather conditions, and not just that. I mean, you know, I just read the other day it was, like, 90 degrees in Anchorage, Alaska, which was a record high. And, you know, we can go on and on with, pictures of lakes and rivers that are now dried up.
So I'm saying, the whole planet, that's why I say you know, that what's most important for us is recognizing that, you know, just like that movie, Get Out. We got to get out. You got to get out. There is, you know, for us, I don't see any hope for us in a possible coalition with people outside of us. I just don't see it. I see destruction. I see ultimate death. And what is our future? You know, because we're dealing with a people, unlike what we want to say that our future, you know, if we have the spirit and believe and, you know, rely on our answer, I understand that. I respect that. But just like Menelik in Ethiopia, Menelik was the chief, was the king at the time. He said, we're dealing with some people who don't, who are anti-spirit. They don't believe, you know, it ain't going to work on these folks. We better get some guns. And they got some guns and fought them back. You know, and Ethiopia, from its history, has never been conquered by Europeans. You know, that's something to be, to me, to be very proud of. But the fact, because all of the continent has been, and right. It is, still is in some form or fashion through neocolonialism, despots, you know, all kinds of things that are still happening on the continent, you know. And somebody just said that they're starting to take the land from the Europeans in South Africa. Well, they need to take the land from all the Europeans and any and everybody else, you know. Mm-hmm. And those Europeans, instead of fighting us for our land, take your ass to Europe. Take your ass right. to the United States. I'm quite sure there's enough of us in the United States. If an offer was made, you can go to South Africa and Namibia and begin mm-hmm. to work with brothers and sisters, and it's like an exchange. The Caucasians will come here. You know, mm-hmm. they'll come here. We'll go there, and the ones of us who are unfortunate minded, because they're not in their right minds, we'll stay here. Good. Let them stay. Let them stay and deal with that. Those of us who have expertise in building, expertise in as being engineers, those of us who just want to go there and work to help build roads, help build infrastructure, help build highways and ports and schools and hospitals and so forth, let us go. Let us go build up Africa. You mentioned earlier about the amount of resources and the fact they don't produce nothing. When I'm in Ghana, Brother Jamoke, and I'm sitting in that cocoa farm, I don't like to call it a plantation. When I'm sitting in that cocoa farm and I'm looking out and I'm looking and I'm saying, damn, here's all the raw materials being shipped out of here mm-hmm. to Europe to make Swiss chocolate. In Belgium, well, I hate Belgium, man. Don't get me started on Belgium. But anyway, Swiss chocolate, you know, Hershey's, Nestle's, Mars, and so forth and so on. You know? Yeah. And then I was there back in April in Ghana. And I'm going to just be real. I was disheartened because almost 10 to 15 years after I was there the first time, there's not a lot of improvement. Still a lot of people, even younger people, were on the streets with something on their head, balanced perfectly, mind you. I saw a sister with some peanuts, man. They had them, you know, how the shape of peanuts are. They're layered like that to be stacked like that. So when you want some peanuts, you'll reach up, grab a few handfuls. Ain't dropped a nut. Okay, man, what balance. But the point is that they're selling stuff that a lot of times comes outside of who we are, particularly China. They're selling a lot of stuff on those streets from China. And China is so heavy in Africa. China is so heavy in the Caribbean. It is ridiculous. And the thing about China, and that's why some people say it's the new colonialism, is that the Chinese, when they come in, unlike the Europeans, just raping them, they at least trying to do something. They've built roads. They built airports. But if you don't pay them back, they'll take your stuff. And they don't use any indigenous labor. They use prisoners from China to get all these jobs done. So, I mean, we got a lot to do, Brother Jamoke. And to me, reparations is one of the things that needs to happen for us. But to me, when we get reparations, it's because we are strong. We have come together on a demand. It's not like what Ados is talking about. I'm just, hey, my descendants were enslaved, and I'm here to get my check. You know, just like you mentioned earlier about the brother said, everybody going to get his check. Yeah, it ain't happening. So.
Yes. Yeah. We have, one thing I heard, and I've been saying this too, but I heard Killer Mike say recently on an interview, he was saying that we need to have some
he called them Sunday meetings, where people would gather. He said with no videos and cameras in the room, and we actually just begin to have some real quality conversations on what we feel we need in terms of reparations. I think that's one of the things that I've been saying is missing right now, because when H.R. 40 gets passed, because it's really moving fast. We have over the last time I got an update, we had 90 co-sponsors of H.R. 40, the bill to put forward reparations remedies in Congress.
I know this bill has been restructured, and I know that when it was initiated in the beginning, it said we want to do a study on the effects of the enslavement on us as a people. Is that still at the heart of it, or what has changed that you know of?
Sure, that's a good question. Yeah, Brother Cam Howard, who's the National Mayor Co-Chair of NCOBA, worked on a rewriting of the bill to do a couple things. One is to bring in the language of the United Nations around the definition of reparations, which is, and I'll come back and elaborate on that, which is five forms of reparations: compensation, restitution, rehabilitation, satisfaction, and guarantees of non-repetition. So that language got included in the bill, as well as shifting it from focusing on just doing a study, you're correct, on slavery and the impact of slavery, but actually calling for reparations remedy proposals, to study reparations remedy proposals is really what the bill is calling for at this point. So, so the bill was rewritten and reintroduced in 2017 with those changes. So it's a much stronger bill in terms of moving us closer to reparations. The original bill had been introduced from 1989 up until 2017 was modeled, though, after how the Japanese got reparations. Because even though it's talking about a study, it also is to make recommendations after the study as well. But now we're moved to another level where we're actually calling for the bill to primarily focus on reparations remedies and proposals.
Good. Yeah. Well, you know, to me, as Frederick Douglass says, power exceeds nothing without a demand, never have and never will, you know. And so our demands must, you know, be dealt with, but it is incumbent upon us to be forceful enough to make them happen. You know, just because you make a demand on something don't mean it's automatically going to happen, especially when you're dealing with a people who have no respect. The Dred Scott decision is germane as it was in 1857 when Tandy wrote the opinion for the court, for the Supreme Court. He was the Chief Justice. He said, black people have no rights that white people are bound to respect. Mm-hmm. You know, so in that mindset at that time, and even today, you can't challenge the government because you ain't a citizen, and you never wanted you to be a citizen. You have no rights. You know, you can't challenge a Caucasian person. No, you have no rights. And I look at that the same way today in the mindset of many legislators, religious people, civic people, business people, white folks in general. Mindset is we have no rights because they created this for them, for their prosperity. They shaped and fashioned it in their image and in their interest.
Right.
And all of the time that when we try to do something, we had to either acquiesce to them or they appropriate something that we did, because they've been doing appropriation for a long time. I don't know. I just saw this on the national news this morning. The sister that did the research when she found out about Jack Daniels, she found out about Jack Daniels and the brother that gave Jack Daniels information when he was young, when Jack Daniels was young, to distill the whiskey that they created in Kentucky. In fact, there's a picture of Jack Daniels, and right over Jack Daniels' right shoulder, they showed it this today, is the brother's son. He was Uncle Nearest. I can't remember his full name, Uncle Nearest. So the sister who did the research, she got some investors. And they created a distillery in Kentucky, and they are bottling Uncle Nearest. You know?
Oh, wow. Okay, yes. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're stuff. Bottling that's Uncle good. Nearest. I'm going to get a bottle. Just in fact, I'm going to get a bottle. And the proceeds go to help his family, you know, send his kids to school and so forth. And one of them was a sister who was a great, great, great granddaughter of his who was talking about it, you know. And see, I understand that, you know, a lie can't last forever. You know,
right?
But when you consider who we're dealing with, and the fact that their mentality is, you know, they'll blow this damn place up, and they can do it, and they can do it. You know, they're the only ones. The Europeans are the only ones that did set off an atomic bomb, but now a whole bunch of folks got atomic bombs, you know, or neutron bombs, or nuclear weapons, or whatever. You know. And the most unstable individual on the planet could put his finger on the button. Trump, that idiot.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because, in the sense that, you know, I hear people say that, you know, America belongs to us because we built it and all of that, and I was like, matter of fact, I was in a group meeting. A pretty large meeting where I mentioned, I brought up, they were talking about reparations, and I brought up, you know, Queen Mother Moore and the Polish and African separation. And then, you know, the response from the facilitator was like, you know, well, we built this nation and I'm not going nowhere. And at the time, I don't remember what my response was, but I remember thinking about it later on. And I thought about it. I said, well, you know, you know, I use a lot of analogy. I said, you know, when you build something, that doesn't necessarily mean it is belongs to you. Mm-hmm. Like, right. if like you were talking about, right, it being built in this image. Like, so if I have some land and I contract with you and your contracting company to build my house, and I tell you the design of the house and how I want it to look, and it's built on my land, you to build it the way that I asked you to build it, when the house is built, you don't have no idea that you're going to get the keys, like I'm going to have the keys of the house. The only thing that I owe you is for the labor, reparations, right, for the labor that you bought the materials, I owe you for the materials,
right,
that you paid, that you purchased in order to build my house for me on my land the way I wanted it to be built. And only to, and so you take the money that I give you for the labor and what you, you know, your expertise, and then you go and get you some land, your own nation or Africa, right, in this mountain, and you build your own house there. You build a house for your cousin and all the people who may work with you with your contracting firm. Mm-hmm. I said, and then I took it to even another level. I said, let's just say, okay, I contract with you to build a house, and you feel for some whatever reason, just based on this lie, that you should have access to my house, and so you start protesting in front of the house, I get embarrassed and decide to say, okay, well, you can come into my house, but guess what? You can come into my house based on these particular rules, because it's still my house.
That's right.
Right?
That's
so I'm going to give you to lay down the rules that you're going to have to obey. And so I say, one of the rules, for example, is that you can't get drunk in my house. So now my son is in the basement drinking. Your son is in the basement drinking. My son gets drunk. Your son gets drunk. What's going to happen? I'm going to call the police on your son.
My son
is okay because he's in my house drinking.
That's right.
And that's what happens in this country. You were just talking about, you know, to me, that like the analogy, what you were talking about, them, you know, having the control and this being their country. I mean, you know, and the laws and everything that impact us, you know, differently, you know, same laws that are in place impact us differently than it impacts them because
exactly.
their house is their country, it's their nation, you know, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when you know the nature of the people we're dealing with and how they evolved, you know, you got to recognize that there is no, you know, gaining any sympathy. There is no reasoning. There is no coming together. There's no rationality. These people, their whole thing is to destroy whatever they touch. Yes, they've built some beautiful buildings, some nice neighborhoods, some this, that, and the other. But when you look at it, and when you look at how the people live, it is unnatural and it is detrimental. It's unhealthy. You know, when you, I was watching a piece on the news about the diseases that are still very prevalent and killing people. And remember how Europeans brought diseases. And I thought about that island nation where the Caucasian had the Bible, and he felt that with the Bible, he could go anywhere and try to so-called civilize and bring this religion to anybody. And so he went to that nation. They told him, don't go there. Don't mess with these people. He went there, and of course, they killed him right away. They didn't even, you know, there was no conversation, you know, because one thing for sure, because that nation has been isolated, the island been isolated, they have no diseases. That was one of the things that really messed a lot of people up when Europeans began to go around the world. When they went into these places, they brought leprosy. They brought smallpox. They brought all kinds of diseases into those communities, aside from later killing them. Well, Brother Jamoke, we ain't got that too much time, man, but I want you to get in some more about the program on Mondays and what's happening. And I know we got Marcus Garvey Day coming up, you know.
So. Sure. Well, I'm glad that, you know, overall this conversation of reparations is heating up. I think that one of the things to me that I've really been pushing, in addition to the fact that we need a reparations plan, is that we also need to begin to figure out how to put some resources together. You had mentioned this earlier, hopefully not getting them from Europeans, but however we need to get them, we need to get them some resources such that we could begin to have staff and dedicated people working on this reparations movement. Because to me, when you study movements, we see that there was always some type of infrastructure that helped them to do what they did, whether it was, you know, SCLC and Martin Luther King, or when you know, Free South Africa Movement, it was Trans-Africa. We can go down the list. And right. In order for us to make this movement really sustainable, we have to figure out how to raise enough resources to create some staff. So that's one of the things that's, I think, important that I want to get out. And there's so much upcoming. I mean, I was just asked by Brother Reginald Muhammad about doing a being on a panel with Ava Muhammad and some other people at the end of this month on July 27th, which is Queen Mother Moore's birthday.
Oh, okay. Where's that going to be? Here in Atlanta? Here in Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay.
At the Mosque 15.
Oh, Mosque 15. Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
And also coming up, the group I mentioned to you with before, the Fellowship of Reconciliation, Truth-Telling, and Reparations Commission, they are doing they're calling it a reparations convening, but it's also in conjunction with the fifth anniversary of Ferguson uprising and the killing of Michael Brown.
Okay.
So there'll be some ceremonies, you know, honoring Michael Brown and dealing with, you know, police brutality and police murder, as well as bringing in the conversation of reparations. And that's going to be in Ferguson, August the 8th through the 11th. I think he might have been killed on the 9th.
Okay.
So that's going on. I'll be going up there to St. Louis Ferguson for that. Just a lot going on. I was asked to speak on a panel with Brother that was put together by Brother Marcus Coleman, who has this organization, Saving Ourselves, used to be with National Action Network, and local activists here in Atlanta. He is put together a nice reparations panel with myself, and Abel Mabel, Troya, Anana Harris-Paris.
Yeah. Okay. Now, when is that going to be?
Joe Beasley. That's going to be at the, what's the name of it? It's a library. Wolf Creek Library.
Oh, Wolf Creek, okay.
That's going to be Saturday, August the 2nd, I believe.
Okay.
Is that the Saturday? No, August the 3rd. Saturday, August the
3rd. Who's sponsoring that one, you know?
Marcus Coleman and Saving Ourselves.
Okay, Saving Ourselves. Okay.
SOS organization.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look for that.
So, yeah, there's a lot that we're continuing to do. But more importantly is the work. We need people to. That's what I'm going to be engaging people in. We need, like I said, we need to raise resources. We need to get, right now, right here, for example, in Georgia, Lucy McBath
Congresswoman Lucy McBath and Congressman David Scott have not signed on to H.R. 40.
So really?
Am I surprised?
I'm surprised at her to some degree, but I know a lot of her support were Caucasians, particularly those who are anti-gun. So, but the other one, I'm like, man, okay, ain't no surprise.
Yeah, so we need to get on them. And another campaign that we're launching, and I know you said we don't have much time. So the other another campaign that we're also actually bringing back, which is years ago, we used to get different cities to sign on, saying pass a resolution in support of H.R. 40, as well as now there's a Senate version as well, which we didn't talk about that. You know, Cory Booker put a Senate version in, which is also historical. We haven't had a Senate companion bill to H.R. 40. We now do. So that's, you know, so we're also encouraging people to call their senators to support the Senate version as well. We got 14 co-sponsors right now.
Is the Senate version, does the Senate version mirror the House version?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see.
So, yeah, man. Yeah. Things are moving. And so, we're getting cities and municipalities and organizations to pass resolutions saying that they support, you know, H.R. 40 and the creation of a reparations commission. And so what we had done, many cities we had already did this, so I thought about, okay, well, we already passed it in Atlanta, and so we were having a conversation on whether or not we should go back to Atlanta, because that was so long ago. I think Bill Campbell was the mayor when we passed in Atlanta. We've had three or four mayors since then.
Sure.
But one person said, no, let's just say Atlanta's already done it. We don't have to, but let's think about other cities. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense, because on the outskirts of Atlanta, you got College Park, you got Eastern, you got Riverdale, you got Stonecrest, you got New City of New South Fulton, you got, you know, all of these predominantly black cities, you know, right, even just on the outskirts of Atlanta. Then you got other cities, Augusta, Savannah, and other cities that we haven't done.
Right.
So
in the state of Georgia.
I've been pushing that we get these. I have a meeting scheduled with Stonecrest and with Lithonia to get bills, resolutions passed in supporting H.R. 40.
Would it be?
And then,
you
know, hopefully this will be picked up all around the country as well.
Is the wording for those municipalities pretty much mirror the national House and Senate bill?
Well,
or to make reference to that?
I don't know how much time we have, but we're actually going to be calling on them to possibly do several things. So the lowest level of support would be for them, or the easiest level of support would be for them to pass a resolution just saying they support the passing of H.R. 40, because they're a municipality, so they're not federal, right?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It's like a not a symbolic resolution, but a resolution that just say they support H.R. 40, and they go on record as saying that.
Okay.
But then secondarily, you know, we do have what's called Slavery Disclosure Acts, where other cities have passed, Philadelphia and Chicago, and some other cities have passed, which says that in order for the city to do business with any corporation, that corporation has to look and see if they've had any connections with slavery.
Right.
And then what they did in Philadelphia took it to another level. And if you do have connections with slavery, then you have to give the city a reparations plan on how you're going to invest money into the black community.
Right, because of how you built your wealth on the back of our people. There has to be some institution. Well, my brother.
So we're going to be going to these municipalities and giving them different options of how far they want to commit themselves to this process. Right. And they could also create an actual reparations commission, like you said, similar to the federal one. They could create at the city level, which you were saying, to mirror that. So that could be like, to me, that would be like another level of commitment if they want to go that far and, you know, actually create. Because in Georgia, we found, for example, there's a Holocaust commission where these two European American women get money given to them to teach about the Holocaust throughout the state of Georgia, right?
Okay.
We create a similar commission teaching about slavery, Jim Crow, convict lease, and reparations in the state of Georgia, right? Yeah. And again, that could be one of the ways that people get some staff and infrastructure, right? So it's a lot. And, you know, my thing is now we got to move from the talking and really.
Well, somebody definitely help us
in moving this forward.
If those Caucasian women, European Jews, developed that and got money for it, we should be right on that and doing the same, getting money for us to do the necessary work on a state level. here in Georgia, because exactly. I'm questioning a lot to deal with. But Brother Jamoke, I got to go. I'm already over my time. I appreciate
all right, man.
Right.
I apologize.
No, brother, no. I do. I run my mouth. But this, dig this. So I'm gonna try to have Conrad on Wednesday. And if you can join us, that'd be a great program. And I appreciate you, dear brother. And I look forward to seeing you in the community. Man, you have a good weekend. We end this program.
Thank you as well.
You too. We end this program, like in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibifo Hodio. Abibifo Hodio means our victorious destinies. Have a blessed weekend, family. Peace.